Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books, an independent New Orleans bookstore. Additional support comes from the University of Louisiana Lafayette Press and the Helles Foundation. Hello and welcome to The Reading Life, your weekly look at the Louisiana literary scene. I'm Susan Larson. Today I'll be talking with Cheryl St. Germain, who will receive the Louisiana Writer Award at this year's Louisiana Book Festival. We'll be talking about her new book, The Small Door of Your Death. It's a great pleasure to welcome Cheryl St. Germain to The Reading Life. Cheryl, a New Orleans native, directs the MFA program in creative writing at Chatham University in Pittsburgh, and she is the recipient of the Louisiana Writer Award this year, which will be presented November 10th at the Louisiana Book Festival in Baton Rouge. Cheryl is a widely published essayist. I love her books Swamp Songs, Memoirs of an Unruly Woman, and Navigating Disaster. And she's an accomplished poet. Her collected poems are in Let It Be a Dark Rue. Her most recent book is the poetry collection The Small Door of Your Death, published earlier this year. Cheryl St. Germain, welcome to The Reading Life, and congratulations.
Thank you, Susan. It's great to be here.
Now, the first time I ever heard you read, years and years ago, you talked about some memorable advice you'd received from Tim Gautreaux, one of your teachers at Southeastern Louisiana University. And that's where you did your undergraduate work. So what was that advice?
One of the things he said to me was, if you're going to write about where you're from, don't write about New Orleans, write about Kenner, because I lived in Kenner for a long time. So that was one thing that he told me. He said, no one's written about that. And so... There's a lot of stuff about New Orleans in my memoir. There's also a lot about Kenner, because that's where I was raised from age 5 to, you know, in my 20s. I was still living there. And he also, this is kind of funny, well, he put a roach on one side and then he put love on the other side. And he said, you know, it's more interesting to write about a roach than it is to write about love. He was trying to get us to not be sentimental, you know. But I never, and I have to say I've never written about a roach, but I understood what he meant. He meant that you needed to write about something very, very specific and not abstract, and that love is an abstraction. So,
well, you can tell he's the author of the story The Bug Man. Now, New Orleans and Louisiana have been inextricably woven into your writing life and your life, you know. And for starters, there's the richness of nature, which you really relished as a child.
That's right. Yeah, I grew up near Lake Pontchartrain, on Williams Boulevard between Lake Pontchartrain and the Mississippi. And at that time, there were a lot of blackberry bushes by the house. There were ditches. We would go searching for crawfish and pick blackberries. I used to climb a mimosa tree in front of our house and read, as did my mother. Yeah, and then the swamps and the slow-moving waters were all something that shaped me as a child.
Well, you've drawn on that landscape for strength and inspiration, and now you bring students from Chatham to have their own experiences here, don't you?
That's right. I've brought graduate students in creative writing twice to New Orleans, once before Katrina and once after Katrina. And we also went to southwestern Louisiana. We went to Lafayette and we visited the Chafalaya Basin. And it was a wonderful trip, and the students have written lots and lots of pieces about those trips.
And what's it like for you to see the landscape through their eyes and their writing?
Well, it's funny because they are, you know, they're tourists and I'm not.
So. Right.
So, you know, the water tastes different to them, you know. When we went to the French Quarter right after Katrina, there were rats actually near our hotel, and that didn't bother me so much, but that was kind of difficult for them. I introduced them to my mother and showed them where I grew up, and I think that was a good thing for them to see in terms of just where a writer comes from, what her family is like. Some of them had never seen Levies before. That was interesting. We also worked with Greg Girard, who some of your listeners might know, died not long ago, but for a long time worked in the basin pulling beautiful cypress trees out and making furniture. And we actually worked with Greg Girard, who some of your listeners might know, died a few years ago, but was someone who was very important to the Atchafalaya Basin, worked there all his life and pulled logs out of the Atchafalaya, cypress logs, and made furniture out of them. And our students worked with him twice when we came down in the Atchafalaya, learning about the cypress, learning about the environment of the swamp. That's one of my most favorite places in Louisiana, the Atchafalaya Basin. And I was just so delighted to see them seeing how beautiful this place was.
Well, and Greg, we should say, was also a wonderful photographer and wrote the book Cajun Families of the Atchafalaya, among many others. But I particularly remember that one. Now, you're working in environmental writing. You've made a specialty of this, and that's expanded over time to include natural settings in many countries, hasn't it?
Yes. I travel almost every year with students. We have a travel writing seminar, and this year we went to Indonesia. We've gone to Vietnam, Belize, Costa Rica, Ecuador, lots of places, and we try to look at what the environmental and cultural issues are there and write about them, investigate them. I'm really interested in students being surprised and falling in love with the natural world, even bugs.
Rats.
Yeah, because when we've traveled a lot in South America, and there's some gorgeous insects there. So we were in Indonesia a few months ago and saw critically endangered orangutans and elephants, and we had to hike six hours to get in this jungle to see them in Sumatra. But it was just something that the students will never, ever forget, you know. And I think they felt the same way. I felt the same way about showing them the swamp in Louisiana as I did about showing them the orangutans in Indonesia, something incredibly beautiful and endangered.
Cheryl St. Germain, tour guide to the world. I love the idea of that. But you always come home to Louisiana.
I do. And if you asked me what my favorite place in the world would be, I would say it's Louisiana, South Louisiana, New Orleans and Lafayette, that Lafayette area, the Atchafalaya. It's just in my blood, and there's nowhere like it in the world.
Well, you taught for many years in Lafayette.
I did. I taught for a few years in Lafayette when it used to be University of Southwestern Louisiana. Now it's ULL.
Right.
That was my first teaching job. Yeah. And I made many friends while I was there. And I also translated some Cajun poetry by Jean Arsenault, otherwise known as Barry Ancelet.
Mm-hmm.
I have Cajun. On my father's side, I'm Cajun. And so, but we didn't live in Ville Platte with our Cajun relatives. So I had to come at it from someone who was older and learning, you know, about the Cajun culture. I wasn't raised in it. So that translating that book of Barry's was really good for me because I learned more about my own culture.
And you write so beautifully about our complicated Cajun and Creole culture. One of my very favorite poems is the title poem of your collection, Let It Be a Dark Rue. Would you read that one for us, please?
I certainly would. It's called Making a Rue. I am making a rue like my mother, like my grandmother, like all the women whose shadows stretch before and behind me. I am standing before the stove stirring. And I wonder what they thought of as they stood and stirred, as their hands went round and round in this ancient gesture. I wonder if they looked deep into it as I do, as if it could speak, stared at this flour and grease come together, this stuff that is base, thickener, nothing you cook will ever cohere without it, this stuff that must be cooked over the slowest fire, this stuff that must be tended until the heat turns it the color of nuts, the color of the earth, the river, the sweet color of some skins, the color the roux gives up to the dish it will thicken. I am making a roux, like my mother, like my grandmother. It is so simple. The flour and grease come together with its thick, bready flavor, like the two of us come together. Let it be a good roux, a dark roux. Let the cream, the smoky glue, the sweat and dirt of us thicken some dish already seasoned, already rich.
I love that poem.
Thank you.
It's the nicest thing in the world to be able to say to a poet, would you just read that poem for me? It's really...
Oh,
now, you know, you've always been concerned with the richer, darker, more troubling aspects of our culture rather than the lighter, more stereotypical, perhaps better known to the world aspects. And your family life's been interwoven with Cajun and Creole cultures.
Right. And, you know, I think there's so much wonderful vibrancy and passion, especially in New Orleans, the music, the food, the love of life, but there's also a dark side to that. And in my own family, we've had a lot of problems with drink and drugs. And so it's all part of the whole vibrant, messy mess that is the family that I come from and the place as well. So for me, writing about that is a way of honoring it, a way of saying, making a gift out of it, you know. So instead of just living with a grief or a sadness or a darkness, you're able to turn it into something, to make it into a present. I've actually thought a lot about the walks I used to take along Lake Pontchartrain, where there would be pollution, but there would be crabs there, and they would have this white, sweet meat, even though they fed on this yucky stuff at the bottom. And I thought they were transforming that into something sweet and good to eat. And that's what I think of poems and essays as, like an act of transformation.
Mm-hmm. And you grew up as a reader. You grew up in a house full of books. I know because I've seen that house.
Yes, my mother loves to read, and I have her to thank for my love of reading and my love of writing. And she's still, I mean, you can hardly walk in her house because there are so many books in every single room stacked up everywhere. Going to the New Orleans Symphony Book Fair every year. I remember my mother would smell my textbooks when I brought them home from school. And it was really wonderful to have a mother who loved reading and loved books and loved New Orleans so much. Actually.
Oh, absolutely. She is a great believer in New Orleans.
Yes.
Now, I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about what writing does for you. You've chronicled so much of your personal struggle in your books, you know, the way you think about being a woman, the way you think about where you live, what you want out of life. You know, how do you choose to write an essay or a poem? How do you choose how much to write about yourself? I mean, Swamp Songs, for example, Memoirs of an Unruly Woman, is one of the most wonderful autobiographies of Louisiana women I've ever read.
Well, you know, when I've kept journals for about 50 years, and my mother was the first one to give me a journal, like a Barbie journal, when I was, I think, 8 or something like that. But
but
it felt good to me to write things that were happening and things chaotic, but it felt like putting them in these little pages of the journal made them make sense in some way. And then as I grew and began to write poems myself, it felt like a way of naming something. So I certainly, there were both in writing the poems and the essays, there's an element of healing for me. And I think that actually one of my goals in life now as a director of an MFA program is to try to move our MFA programs in that direction more. I think that our programs are too elitist and too much about teaching our students to promote their own work. And so I work a lot with, I have a program that I founded called Words Without Walls, where we go into jails and prisons and rehab facilities and teach creative writing. And since my own son died of a drug overdose in 2014, I and my father and my brother both died of some related to substance abuse. It's something I care about a great deal. So I've written a lot about my family and particular issues. And I've found that working with women and men who are suffering in some way and helping them to write is just a beautiful, beautiful thing. It reminds me of, you know, why we all, most of us, went into creative writing to begin with, because we had a story to tell. We had something to say. And there's just so much research that shows how healthy it is to write. You know, now for me, I want writing to be a gift. So I do think a lot about, I choose, you know, what I want to write about and what it makes sense for other people to read. But for example, the new book that has to do with my relationship with my son and his death, it's a sad book on some levels, although there is hope in it. But we have so many stories and memoirs that have been written about recovery. But a lot of us are not recovering. A lot of people are not recovering. And I think there's a place for grief, and there's a place to honor the complicated relationships we have with family members, people that we love who are troubled. And so I think a lot about that. I don't want to make people sad. I do want them to reflect on things.
Now, that collection is the absolutely heartbreaking but wonderful, The Small Door of Your Death, about the loss of your son, Gray Gideon, at a very early age. That's a situation that so many parents are finding themselves in these days. And what I love about this book is that you also capture, in addition to those grief-stricken moments of loss, you also capture moments of the wild joy that mothers feel when raising children.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. My son was a musician and a composer of electronic music. And we loved music. He loved music. I loved music. We would dance together when he was little. And then later, when we couldn't find words, we sometimes communicated through a song, you know, he'd say, "Hey mom, listen to the song. It says exactly what I feel." And so there's a long poem in the book that's called Versions of Heaven, which is, it was sort of after a while he'd been dead, and I thought, I have to find something positive to do with this grief. And so I thought about all the moments that he'd shared music throughout the years, and that helped a lot.
And I love the way you talk about the swords, your use of the swords from the tarot.
Yes, yeah, that's, I'm a, I collect tarot cards, and I sometimes use them to help me generate poems. And if I don't know where to go. And so this one particular summer I was writing, I kept getting the swords, which are the difficult suit. And I just kept picking swords over and over again. And I thought, well, I'm gonna just riff off of these swords. And I did a lot of research on the tarot and see what insight they can give me into where I am with this grief and this moving forward and this thinking about how to help my son. Some of this was before he died, but he was still troubled, you know. Mm-hmm. Any parent who has a child that is suffering from substance abuse is going to have a complicated relationship with them, and that there will be times when it's really wonderful, and there's going to be times when there's lies, and there's both.
So. And there's times when of wild hope, you know, great hope.
Yes, yes, there is. And there is hope in this book as well.
Oh, so much. Now, would you read for us the poem Prayer for My Son? It's such a lovely poem.
Sure. I think it's the last poem in the mm-hmm. book. I wrote this after I scattered his ashes in a creek. Prayer for a Son. May your soul now be with the creek. May it swell and flood in spring, brimming with excitement and wildness as you sometimes were in this other life, ebbing and emptying in winter to reveal what had been hidden in those spring floods, the wounds and bones of your heart. May the small fish that live here nibble at your ashes, finding them sweet and filling, and may the dust of your body fall like pollen on the spring wildflowers, deepening the pinks, yellows, and lavenders of their petals, until their colors are like wells that lead to another way of knowing. May the insects sense the presence of your spirit as they make trails through your leavings. May summer rains join with you, and together may you enter the thin crusts of this soil to reach the roots of oak and cedar, juniper and cactus. May you overfill their veins with that joy you sought but rarely found, until you burst into acorn or berry or fruit. And when the wind blows, may it catch and scatter the dust of you on wing of bird or butterfly, on fur of squirrel or rabbit, coyote, cougar, or wild horse. May you fly with them to strange places those you have left behind can neither know nor imagine. And when you are root and wing, seed and flower, when you are bone and breath, then may we be blessed to hear you in song of bird and cricket. May we see you again in the mad blinking of the fireflies and in the silence after the poem's last word.
Oh, this is such healing, beautiful work, Cheryl. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan.
So I hope you're never going to get tired of writing about Louisiana.
No, I don't think so. You know, I'm actually retiring in May, and my husband and I have talked about, we think we'll be able to live in spring in Louisiana now. I travel a lot to Louisiana, and I write about it a lot, but I haven't been able to live there full time. Now that I'm retiring, and my husband's a freelance photographer who can live anywhere, we both decided that we're gonna live in the spring in Louisiana. So I'm really hoping that that's going to give me new things to write about. So looking forward to that.
I can't wait. We've been talking with Cheryl St. Germain, the recipient of the Louisiana Writer Award this year. You can meet her Saturday, November 10th at 10 at the State Capitol in Baton Rouge at the Louisiana Book Festival. And she'll also appear in New Orleans Thursday, November 15th at 7 at the Dogfish Reading Series, 2448 North Villery. Cheryl, thank you so much.
Thank you, Susan. Lovely talking to you.
Il y a des plages qui me rappellent moi, tout mon vie, mais y'en a qu'à changer, y'en a pour toujours, mais pas mieux.
Y'en a qui gone on, y'en a qu'à rester.
Tous ces plages sont le moment, avec nos amours et amis, je me rappelle moi. Y'en a qui vit et qui sont morts.
Dans ma famille, je l'ai tous aimé.
The Louisiana Book Festival is coming up Saturday, November 10th from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. on the grounds of the State Capitol in Baton Rouge. More than 250 authors will appear at more than 100 programs. Here are some of my picks. Don't miss the presentation of the Louisiana Writer Award to Cheryl St. Germain in the House Chamber at 9 a.m. This is always one of the most moving events in the literary year. That presentation will be followed by Cheryl's conversation with former State Poet Laureate Daryl Bork. That's at 10 a.m. in House Committee Room 1. And then Cheryl discusses her new book of poems, The Small Door of Your Death, with Louisiana Poet Laureate Jack Bedell. That's at 11 in House Committee Room 1. At 10:35 in House Committee Room 2, there will be a discussion of 21st century Southern fiction with some great authors. C. Morgan Babst, author of The Floating World, Jamie Quatro, author of Fire Sermon, Nick White, author of Sweet and Low, and Matthew Griffin, author of Hyde. That's sure to be a great one. And at 11 a.m. in the House Chamber, Ernest Gaines discusses his most recent novel, The Tragedy of Brady Sims, with Daryl Bork and Marcia Godet. Ernest Gaines was the first recipient of the Louisiana Writer Award. Then at 1:45 in Senate Committee Room F, Lou Burney discusses his new thriller, November Road. And for the youngsters, don't forget Johnette Downing, who will be unveiling her new book, Who Got the Baby in the King Cake? That's at 10:30 in the storytelling tent. Those are just a few highlights. Food and music and book sales round out the offerings, along with children's activities and exhibits. Visit the State Library or the State Museum. Watch a cooking demo or learn how to make paper. The entire schedule is up at LouisianaBookFestival.org. Don't miss it.
Thank you.
what's on tap in the literary life this week. Poet Ann Boyer, author of The Romance of Happy Workers and Garments Against Women, presents a reading Monday, November 5th at 7 at Freeman Auditorium at Tulane University. This year, Ann won the inaugural Cy Twombly Award for Poetry from the Foundation for Contemporary Art, as well as a Whiting Award in Nonfiction and Poetry. Brian Batt and Katie Danos discuss and sign Pontchartrain Beach, A Family Affair, Wednesday, November 7th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop, and Saturday, November 17th from 11 to 12:30 at Barnes & Noble Metairie. Tracy Duncan will be teaching a six-week course, Writing is Becoming, November 5th through December 10th, Mondays from 6:30 to 9 at the Dragonfly, 3921 St. Cloud Avenue. For registration and fees, email Duncan Tracy, that's T-R-A-C-E-Y, at gmail.com. Octavia Books presents New York Times bestselling novelist Marissa Meyer and her second installment in the YA series called Renegades, the follow-up to Arch Enemies. This is a ticketed event. Tickets are available at Octavia Books. Meyer appears Tuesday, November 6th at 6 at the Academy of the Sacred Hearts, NIMS Fine Arts Center, 4301 St. Charles Avenue. Doors open at 5. Poet James Nolan reads from and signs Nasty Water, Collected New Orleans Poems, Thursday, November 8th at 6 at Garden District Bookshop. Beth Diodono talks about 100 Things to Do in New Orleans Before You Die, the new edition, Thursday, November 8th at 6 at the Alvar Branch Library. Poppy Tooker, author of Pascal's Manali Cookbook, A Family Tradition, talks about it Thursday, November 8th at 7 at the East Bank Regional Library in Metairie. Also coming up, Words and Music, a literary feast in New Orleans, takes place November 15th through 18th, headquartered at the Renaissance New Orleans Pere Marquette Hotel. Among the authors appearing are Leah Chase, Justin Nystrom, Jason Berry in conversation with T.R. Johnson, Kelly Harris DeBerry in conversation with Melissa Weber, DJ Soul Sister, Kim Vaz DeVille, Allison Pellegrin, James Nolan, Peter and Nicole Cooley, and Maurice Carlos Ruffin. For more information, check out the Facebook page. And get ready for Improvisation, New Orleans' Gift to the Modern World, a tricentennial conference November 30th through December 3rd at various locations throughout the city. The conference is an outgrowth of Randy Fertel's book, A Taste for Chaos, The Art of Literary Improvisation, and will gather together writers, musicians, theater folk, and storytellers for workshops and masterclasses as well as other performances. For complete info and tickets, go to improvconferencenola.com. For the Tricentennial Reading List every Tuesday at 8:44 a.m. and 5:44 p.m. The Tricentennial Reading List is brought to you by the Hellas Foundation, the John Burton Harter Trust, and the Louisiana Endowment for the Humanities. Major support for The Reading Life comes from Octavia Books. Additional support comes from the Christwood Retirement Community, the University of Louisiana at Lafayette Press, and the Hellas Foundation. The theme song and end music for The Reading Life are by Matt Perrine and Sunflower City. The Reading Life is produced by George Engmeyer and is a production of WWNO. You can listen to us anytime or subscribe to our podcast at wwno.org. And you can email us at thereadinglife@wwno.org.